You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. From sign stealing to adding just a little bit of extra spit on the ball, professional baseball has created plenty of ways to fool crowds and umpires, but there is a fine line between the written and unwritten rules of the game. And it makes you wonder, where is the line between innovation and cheating in baseball? Back in August, we caught up with Dan Levitt and Mark Armour, authors of the book Intentional Balk, Baseball's Long and Sordid History of Innovation and Cheating. And I asked Dan to start out our conversation telling me about one of the most legendary baseball innovators, John McGraw.
So John McGraw was the most famous person, the best known person in baseball before Babe Ruth. And he was a player with the Baltimore Orioles, the old NL team in the 1890s. And this was a team that did a lot of really smart stuff. They were one of the first to invent the Baltimore chop, where you hit down on the ball and get a big bounce and do certain cutoff plays. And I mean, they were doing a lot of innovative things on the good side. They were also doing a lot of innovative things on the bad side. They would grab players' belts when they rounded third. They would hide balls in the outfield. They would happily, you know, go in spikes high and try and get other players out of the way. At the time, there was only one umpire, and so the players might cheat and go from like first and miss second base and head over to third base. So he was pretty much doing everything that way. And then by the time he was the manager for the first 30 years of the 20th century with the New York Giants, he had a lot of innovative things that he was doing as well. He was one of the first people to use relief pitchers. Platooning, he was the first at. But then he was also doing sort of illegal roster moves of trying to control players illegally. So he was doing a lot of innovative stuff that was helping and a lot of innovative stuff that was helping, but maybe not legally.
It just sounds like the Three Stooges on the field, like holding on to guys' belt loops while they're rounding to, you know, trying to get to third base. I love the line in your book about McGraw, and it goes, quote, "Creativity, generally a valued trait, often shows up in the act of finding novel approaches to age-old problems. But sometimes creators cross the line, and then you have cheating." So, Mark, my question is, how does Major League Baseball go about deciding where that line should be between creativity and cheating?
When we started out, we defined cheating to be breaking a rule in such a way that you would be helping yourself or your team. So throwing the World Series, we don't talk about any of that because you're not really helping. Or taking cocaine is not helping. That's how we started. As we got along, we realized that there was beyond the rule book, and there's really multiple rule books. There's a rule book that governs how the game is played on the field, but there's also rule books that govern how teams deal with each other and how they deal with players, et cetera. But beyond all of that, we define something called the consensual ethic, which is something that gets built up over time between players, but also between umpires and players, in terms of, well, beyond the rule book, how do we actually want this game to proceed? And this is unwritten, which is frustrating for historians like us, because we couldn't sort of rely on a printed page to get to define this for us. But yet this was a crucial part of actually what cheating really is, because players ultimately decide how the game is played. And what we found was that, you know, framing a pitch, having the catcher frame a pitch to try and get a strike, for a long time, you know, players not touching second base on a double play, these were not considered cheating by the players, even though I could point to a rule that says, well, actually, you're supposed to touch the base, and you're also supposed to, you're not really supposed to spend your whole time tricking the umpire. But these are that no player would agree with what I just said. I mean, that is how the game is supposed to be played for the most part. And that even was true for a long time with things like taking amphetamines and stealing signs. It became a much tougher line because players might sort of wink at you and say, well, yeah, it's not really allowed, but you know, no one's really going to do anything about it. So first of all, it's very much a gray line. And second of all, it's not the rule book. I mean, the rule book is part of it. The thing that sort of Dan really helped us with is sort of to define this notion that, well, you have this consensual ethic. And what happens when people don't agree on the consensual ethic? That's when I think problems come into play.
What about the types of cheating that are absolutely not okay? That this is clearly over the line, according to the consensual ethic, according to what players feel. Are PEDs, for example, or is that part of that?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true now. It was probably always true. I mean, steroids became, you know, illegal to, you know, in the United States, certainly by 1990, which is when they started to show up in baseball. And there was really never a time when, that I'm aware of, where any player on record said, you know what, we should just allow steroids. I mean, no one really did. And there were players taking steroids and there were players not taking steroids. I think it was 100% agreement that they shouldn't be allowed. However, there was no way to stop it, right? I mean, the spitball is happening with 50,000 people watching you. Steroids is happening in your home or in your doctor's office or in your gym. So it is pretty much impossible to detect that someone's taking steroids without testing. And that became the controversy of the age that raged for several years before they finally had a testing program. But that didn't come until 2004. And I still have yet to come across any player that says we shouldn't test for steroids.
You know, one of the things that we talk about in the book and just sort of the way that some of this has evolved is the difference between restrictive drugs and enhancing drugs. And, you know, back in 1951, when there was the first drug controversy, it was actually around a pitcher getting Novocaine in his shoulder so he could pitch. And that quickly died off. And I think much of that is because of this whole, and again, it's a gray line, but what's restorative, such as, you know, something like, you know, Novocaine or now cortisone or Tommy John surgery or LASIK surgery versus actually enhancements of your quote natural ability. And does that sort of destroy the integrity of the sport? And this idea that we're watching sort of the human limits against other human limits. And once that sort of tarnished, we've changed the nature of competition.
Let's talk about, because we're in Seattle, the Mariners, they have this slice of scandal history, some slices of scandal history that show up in your book. One of them involves a 1980s manager named Maury Wills and the groundskeeper. What's that story, Mark? What happened there?
He was an excellent, excellent baseball player for many years and spent a bit of time after his career not really subtly campaigning to be a manager. Like he was always somebody that believed that he should manage. He had all these ideas, largely involving running, which is what he specialized in. And then he got one shot with the Mariners and he didn't last very long. He had other controversial incidents beyond the one we talk about in the book, which ended up ending his job. And basically the story goes that the Mariners were playing the Oakland Athletics in a series in Seattle at the Kingdom. And one of their players, Tom Pachorek, who was one of their better hitters at the time, I mean, the Mariners weren't very good. He, in order to apparently get a better look or have a better luck against the curveball, decided he would stand further up in the box to the point where his front foot was out of the batter's box. And the rules are pretty clear that you have to stand in the batter's box. They draw a box, which is a rectangle on each side. And so the umpire said, you need to move back. And, you know, there was some kind of, you know, argument about this apparently. But anyway, he moved back. The next day, Billy Martin came out to the field. He was the manager of the A's. And he said, there's something wrong with the box. And they measured it. And the batter's box had been lengthened. The box where the Mariners bat or and the A's batters too would stand had been increased. So they brought out the groundskeeper and said, hey, what's the deal? This box is too big. And he goes, Maury Wills told me, who's the manager of the Mariners, told me to make a bigger box. So he threw him under the bus completely. Wills was suspended by the league for this. And while he was suspended, the Mariners fired him. So this ended his career as a manager because he never got another job, which is too bad. I mean, he may be a nice guy otherwise, but he didn't. He was a failure. a failure in this one area of his career.
Yeah, if you your stance is putting you outside the batter's box, just draw a bigger batter's box. Why didn't I think of that?
It seemed like a good idea at the time. Yes.
I wonder, is that kind of goofy stuff still going on now that we have, you know, replays and high speed cameras and just everything is on, you know, instant recall on social media? Is that kind of goofy, pretty harmless cheating still something that people would try today in the major leagues?
Well, yeah, you would think no. And I think a lot of the stuff, yes, there's replay. Gaylord Perry was a very famous pitcher for years and played in Seattle near the end and actually got in trouble as a Mariners pitcher for using the spitball. He was very famous for the spitball. He'd have a harder time today because he's filmed from every angle while he's on the field, and part of his game was deception and whatnot. So some of the stuff is harder. A handful of years ago that I somehow missed this story when it happened, but it's one of my favorite stories in the book. And it's one of my favorite because of the fact that it highlights the fact that this people still think this way. And that is there was a play in a game in New York, Dodgers Mets game, and the hitter for the Dodgers, Alex Verdugo, hit a pop foul that essentially was, you know, right near the front row of the dugout. So the third baseman for the Mets, who was Todd Frazier, like went over the thing. It's a very common play in baseball. You reach into the crowd, try and catch the ball. And he reached in, came out with a ball, got the out call, immediately tossed the ball back into the stands, ran off, inning over. Well, with replay, which could not reverse the call. When I talk about replay, I mean, they showed this on the TV screen, not that this had anything to do with the game. You realize that Todd Frazier actually didn't catch the ball at all. What he did was he reached into the crowd, found another ball lying on a chair, picked that ball up and held it out to the umpire to get the out call. And this is the kind of thing that Dan talked about, you know, John McGraw and the old Orioles. This is the kind of thing that John McGraw used to talk about them doing, like hiding a ball in the outfield, yep, and using that ball instead. And it really seems like an olden times story, right? I remember reading, I used to eat these stories up when I was a kid about olden time baseball and the weird things they did. So the fact that this happened like in 2015 is, I think, a really cool thing for our story, because what our story is this is how they're wired. This is how competitive athletes and baseball players are wired. This is not a 1890s thing. This is a all of history of baseball thing.
I would add that, you know, one of the things, I mean, instant replay has changed one thing, and that there's been this long history of how to deception of the umpire. Mark talked earlier about sort of the phantom double play where the second baseman doesn't touch on second base to avoid the slide, which was sort of accepted. The first baseman, a lot of times on close plays, would pull his foot off the base a fraction of a second early to catch the ball earlier and get the out call. The whole play of, you know, trapping the ball in the outfield and holding it up like you caught it. All of those, which have gone on in baseball pretty much forever, those types of plays are now gone because of the replay challenge ability. So I think that there's a whole group of types of plays of cheating that's pretty much off the table at this point because of that. Of course, there's all the other things we have in the other nine chapters in the book, but at least that one, because of the ability to do the challenge, has changed a little bit.
What about technology? How is technology changing the game and the way that players cheat?
Well, I mean, I think that part of what we talk about in the book is that as long as there's technology, people are going to try and use it to figure out some new way to get ahead. I mean, whether that's the invention of binoculars in 1894 or this whole the spider tack, which gives the pitchers better grip. I mean, the story of that is fascinating. It was invented in about somewhere around 2010, 2011 by the world's strongest men competitors who had to like carry these giant Atlas stones. And the spider tack was supposed to help you grip the stone so you could carry it. And the folks who developed this stuff said, we started getting these requests from major league teams, major league locker rooms, like they wanted this spider tack stuff. And they finally figured out why people wanted it, because it gave you a better grip and it allowed you to spin the ball better and get results on the pitch. So here's something completely outside of baseball that someone said, you know, we need to use this to try and figure out how to pitch better. And the other thing that goes along with that in technology in the pitch is this high speed video. It's you know, back in the day, you know, a pitcher would throw and the catcher would say, yeah, that looked pretty good. Maybe try and put a little more spin on it this way, or, you know, put your saliva on it on this side of the ball. But now we have these very sophisticated laboratories that the pitchers can use. And, you know, and with this high speed video, and you can move your fingers the tiniest bit and it'll be picked up. And so between the spider tack and this video, that's just one example of how technology is coming together to, you know, give another opportunity to cheat. And again, this video is not cheating on its own. I mean, a lot of pitchers use it without the sticky stuff to figure out how to hold the pitch and throw it. But just sort of all of the technology, if there's a way to figure out how to gain an advantage in baseball, people naturally will, because they're competitive.
That was Dan Levitt and Mark Armour, authors of the book Intentional Balk, Baseball's Long and Sordid History of Innovation and Cheating. You can find the rest of our interview on our website at kuow.org. Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at kuow.org, or of course on your favorite podcast app.